Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me start with the recap of last night's game. I said going in, I was hyped. That was the rare Thursday night game that had major postseason implications and was a great matchup, and I was not disappointed. Seahawks went into last night's game having lost two in a row in three of their last four and did not look good coming in. Russell Wilson did not look like Russell Wilson. The defense did not look like a defense. They went from let Russ cook to Russ burning every meal and a four-alarm fire in the kitchen that threatened to burn that entire house right to the ground. And then they went into last night, tied with Arizona and LA at 6-3, but they had already lost to both of them head-to-head, so they were trailing them despite having the same record. Now, I'm not going to say that that was a must-win game for Seattle, but that was a must-win game for Seattle. You lose that game, and then you've lost twice to Arizona, and then you've got your first three-game losing streak since 2011. What I'm saying is Seattle needed to get right, and they had to get right last night against a red-hot Cardinals team. The Arizona Cardinals went into last night having won 4 of 5, including that epic Hail Mary win over Buffalo on Sunday. Kyler Murray looked even better than anybody imagined that he would look in his second season. I mean, I've been saying this every single week. I don't want to say he's my favorite player in the NFL, but I'm going to say that he is the single most electric player in the NFL and getting better every single week. The defense was doing enough. In fact, it was getting better week by week, even without Chandler Jones. So Arizona last night did not need to get right. They already were right. And a win last night, though, would have given them a firm grasp on the division. So Seattle did what they had to do. They absolutely had to have that game. And the biggest shock of all, not that they got that game, but how they got that game. Their defense got them that game. I mean, sure, Wilson stopped giving the ball to the other team, which he had done 10 times in the last four games. Very un-Russ-like. But he looked a hell of a lot more like himself last night, especially on that TD pass to DK Metcalf to open up the game.
Wilson has the snap, back on a play fake, rolls to his right, plants his feet, looks back to his left, nothing there, steps up. Wilson now throws for the end zone. Metcalf has it. Touchdown, Seattle. Russell Wilson stepped up in the pocket and finds DK Metcalf in the end zone.
So he looked like himself, right? Russ looking like Russ. And then Russ looked even more like himself when he found his guy Tyler Lockett later in the first half.
Wilson in the gun, takes the snap, back to pass, surveys the field, looks, lobs it up, right corner of the end zone. It is caught. Touchdown, Seattle. Tyler Lockett with outstanding footwork in the back right corner of the end zone. Lockett pulls down his 8th touchdown catch of the year, and the Seahawks lead it 13-7 with 8:27 to go on the first.
Those dudes, like, as good as Wilson to Metcalf is, and Metcalf is a bleeping monster, there's still nothing like Wilson to Lockett. The chemistry those two have. If Lockett gets even a crack of separation in the end zone, you know he's going to house it. He's going to finish it. He's going to make a play, especially against the Cardinals. Lockett is an absolute Cardinal killer. He's serial against those guys. But last night's 28-21 win was not about Wilson or Lockett or even Carlos Hyde, who, by the way, makes an enormous difference for Russ and the offense. I mean, again, don't get me wrong. They were all good, really good. But last night was about the Seattle defense. I don't know if that was about the defense finally showing up or if that was just some one-off. But for at least one night, they were better than they had been all year long. And what they had been all year long was not just one of the worst defenses in the NFL, but one of the worst defenses ever. But they woke the hell up last night, and they absolutely did lock the Cardinals up on the ground. Kenyon Drake, 29 yards. Chase Edmonds, 13 yards. Most of all, Kyler Murray, 15 yards. 15 total. His longest run was 8 yards. He had 3 zone reads for 1 yard. And if Kyler's not running, they're not winning. If he is, they are. The numbers bear this out. 15 yards rushing For instance, when Kyler Murray rushes for less than 30 yards, they're 1-8-1. When he was running wild in the five games prior to this one, they were 4-1. I'm not looking to point the finger at anybody or anything. Yes, I will, but not at Murray, but rather at the line in front of him. The offensive line had a horrible night. They couldn't run it. Murray took a beating, and the O-line had four false starts. Four false starts in an empty stadium. You know I love the Cards. You know I love the Cardinals. But the hell is that? Four false starts in an empty stadium. But back to Seattle, manning the hell up on D. How about the way that busted up secondary showed up last night? I would have bet anything coming into that game that DeAndre Hopkins was going to abuse them. Instead, they hold him to 5 receptions for only 51 yards, and he didn't hurt them at all. Not that he would ever use it as an excuse, but some of that might be because of Kyler Murray's shoulder, the fact that he was dinged up. But if he was, it was because Seattle was bringing the heat. As Bobby Wagner said afterwards, quote, "I definitely felt like he felt us more than the last game," end quote. No doubt about that. That's the truth. And after having 0 sacks against the Cardinals in their first meeting, Seattle had 3 last night, which included, and what a pickup this guy was, Carlos Dunlap, who iced the game. He had a couple, but he iced the game with this.
4th down and 10 now. They need the 17 for a first down. 3 receivers right, 2 left. Here's the snap. Murray back to pass. Murray hit. Murray is sacked. Carlos Dunlap gets his 2nd sack of the game, and the Seahawks take over with 34 seconds to go.
Man, what a huge performance from Seattle's defense. Absolutely massive when they absolutely had to have it. Easily their biggest win of the season. Like, they played like a group that was sick of hearing and reading about how crappy they were. Sick of getting their names and legacies dragged through the mud and the record books. I mean, nobody's going to mistake these guys on defense with Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett or Cam Chancellor or Richard Sherman. But they were good last night. And if you're the Cardinals, you got to be tripping the entire flight back to Arizona because you didn't play well at all. In fact, you were sloppy as hell with those 10 penalties for 115 yards, some of which were pretty idiotic. I mean, the false starts, of course, but do not sleep on the 3 holding penalties, including the one in the end zone for a safety. I mean, that was especially dumb. Giving Seattle 2 points and the ball in the 4th quarter is not something you want to do. And then there was the Patrick Peterson 46-yard pass interference right before halftime. That was a killer. The Dre Kirkpatrick personal foul on what would have been 4th down for Seattle. I mean, that was the last one. That was the dumbest one of all. Yet as dumb and as undisciplined as they were last night, somehow, some way, Arizona still had a chance to tie that game late. That tells you something about Arizona. Even when they're making mistakes, even when they're rolling out their C game, they're still dangerous. They were still in position to rip that game late, even if they had shot off every toe on both feet. What I'm saying is this. Arizona is not going away. I'm still riding with these guys. I still love them. It was a painful loss, but it was not a season killer. Not at all. Arizona was the team that could afford to lose that game. Seattle couldn't afford to lose it. It could have ended their season. They had to have it, and they got it. Credit for that. And now the reward is they get to eat. Now they get to slam some NFC East cream puffs and the Jets for the next month. Bon appetit, fellas. You earned it last night. You earned it last night.
Hey, Seattle.
Hey, Seattle. Russ hey, was Seattle. Back to being Russ. Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. No, we want beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. Shriveled, dry, tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. So what makes it so good? It's because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper, is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. Plus, it's in a clear view bag. That way you can see the quality that you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? We are joined by Mark Few. Mark, it's good to have you back. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. All good, Jim. Yeah, it is kind of crazy to finally, I think we're getting close here. So it's guys are excited and staff's excited. And it almost seems surreal.
Whole thing seems really surreal, by the way, Mark. Like, you've been a head coach for 21 seasons now. Have you ever experienced anything like the last 8 months?
I mean, just absolutely not. Nah, there's no playbook for it. There's no experiences to be able to draw off of. You just have to kind of, you know, try to just use whatever, you know, experiences you have in the past. We're just dealing with everything from crises to really reaching out and connecting with your guys as they kind of journey through this. I think that to me is one of the biggest things that seems to be lost in all this is, you know, everybody's analysis of the numbers and cases and things like that is there's really something to the mental health of young adults and who have focused on, you know, basketball is their life, really, and they're student athletes, but, you know, basketball is their main life, especially when you get them at the level that we have them here.
Mark Few is joining us. You know, Mark, to that point, like, you want to look ahead, and I think we all so badly want to put this behind us, but we can't do it just yet. But when you talk about mental health and what the athletes are dealing with, when I'm watching the NBA draft on Wednesday night, I'm reminded of how painful it was not to have an NCAA tournament because so many of the players who were drafted did not get to have those moments and that experience. You and I spoke in January of this year. We were talking about the team that you had and the run that you may have made. So what was it like for you to have the season end the way it did?
Jim, hey, listen, bud. Easily the absolute worst moment of my, you know, actually 32 years of coaching college basketball. To walk into that locker room, ironically, after, you know, I think it was 24 or 36 hours earlier, I told the guys, okay, look, this is a real bummer. We're not going to have fans, but we are having the NCAA tournament. You know, we have to have it, you know, because it runs the entire, actually, you know, NCAA. And so to walk back in that locker room, Jim, and have to tell Killian Tilly, you know, and our other seniors, you know, Killian had been there 4 years, and Woolridge had transferred in there, as had Admon Gilder, and they came just to play in the NCAA tournament. Telling them they weren't going to be able to was just crushing. And it was, you know, there was so much emotion at that time with everybody. And it was just, you know, it'll be one of those moments you remember for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's tough. So, so tough. Mark Few is joining us, Gonzaga head basketball coach. You know, Mark, when you talk about the journey also, from our conversations over the years, I've always been struck by the fact that you personally are always looking to learn and grow and evolve. I'm really curious. Like, I've thought about this a lot, and I've talked to a lot of people about the way they have approached this pandemic. Like, I'm curious what you've learned throughout this process over the past 8 months. What's your biggest takeaway personally?
Probably the biggest thing is to try to take a step back from your own personal views, however strongly you may feel about those, and then I find myself doing this all the time, even, you know, today, and just like, okay, let me, now, this, obviously I feel totally different than this other person does, but I'm going to try to understand, I'm going to try like heck to understand his perspective, because I can see that he's as either fired up about this or feels as strongly as I do, just with a different perspective. So trying to do that, I'm just telling you, just the respect I have for the young kids going through this, whether it's my own kids that are here studying at the dining room table as we speak right now, not being able to go to school, to the college kids. I mean, I call it, like, college life at Gonzaga right now is not what it usually is. There's no socialization, and it's just, but I can't believe how compliant and how they're positive, and you know, everybody's masking up and doing their thing and still doing their deal with a smile on their face, and there doesn't seem to be any complaints. I mean, I just marvel at my own guys, how what they're doing, because they're living a pretty Spartan life right now.
It's true, isn't it, right? The young folks, Mark, they're pretty resilient. They bounce back.
Yep.
They're durable. They're pliable. They're good. They show old guys like us something. Like, we always think, like, man, kids don't know anything about anything, but they know more than we give them credit for sometimes. Mark Few is joining us. Mark, I mentioned off the very top that the program is number one in the AP poll. I know that's not the goal, but what's it say about the program that you've built there that you're in a spot like that?
Yeah, and you and I have done a lot of these over the years where we try not to, you know, the polls.
Right.
They don't really mean much to you. I would say this, though, Jim, that the cool thing about this is, like, being preseason number one to me tells you that you've really, your program has garnered the respect, you know, of the nation. And it really has nothing to do with what this year's team has done. It's a reflection of what the guys in the past have done, you know, because it's usually reserved for the Kentuckys or Dukes or Carolinas or even Kansases. And it's almost like, hey, okay, we're going to accept you into the club now. And that's an accomplishment that I think all of our former players, you know, and really the teams just recently, the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years that have been knocking on that door deserve all the credit for.
I'm going to do you one better, Mark. Not only are you number one in the country, but you're in that spot after the WCC Conference Player of the Year, Filip Petrušev, signed to play in Serbia. So that really speaks to the depth and what you've built there. You've got four guys that are on the Naismith Trophy watch list, which means there are so many guys on the roster I could ask you about. But let me ask you about, for instance, Drew Timmy, who's coming off a really strong season. What does the next step in his growth look like? What are your expectations for him?
I mean, he's primed for a big year. Jim, he's a really, really versatile player who's a little bit of a kind of a throwback zag with he's got the personality a little bit of maybe an Adam Morrison or a Robert Sacre. He's pretty confident, pretty loud, pretty brash. He loves to have a good time, but he is one of those, you know, kind of the, as you know, 2020, forwards now that are, you know, he's 6'10 and he can go down on the block, but we're also more than comfortable having him take the ball off the glass and lead the break, much like Hachimura and Brandon Clark did. And you know, he's done that throughout his career. That's what I kind of saw and watching him play AAU ball, was just that versatility and confidence. And I think he was really coming on at the end of last year, and I think now with more and more minutes opening up for him, he's primed for a big year.
We're talking to Gonzaga head basketball coach Mark Few for a few more moments. Mark, I can't wait to see your freshman, Jalen Suggs. He was Mr. Basketball and Mr. Football, both in the state of Minnesota. Yeah. The first person to ever win both awards in the same year. It's an amazing accomplishment. Obviously, athletically, he's pretty gifted. What are you more impressed with, his athletic ability or his competitive spirit and toughness?
Oh, you nailed it. I love his competitive spirit and toughness. And it's funny, you know, I think as we get farther and farther along, there's more and more specialists, you know. You have to start just playing basketball at age 5. That's all you do, it seems like. A lot of parents have their kids do it. I love having multi-sport athletes because it just shows and hones their competitive desire so much. And this kid is, I mean, from the day he stepped foot here, yeah, he's still a work in progress, you know, skill wise, as you would expect for, you know, a 19-year-old, and even athletically, you know, he's still coming along there and understanding everything. But competitively and toughness wise, from day one, as far as getting on the floor and being physical and getting after people, those are usually the things it takes a while for your freshman to adjust to. But he's been on top of that from the jump, and I know that's from playing football at a high level, quite frankly. And it's nice to be able to draw on that. And I kind of wish more kids would continue to play multi sports before they get to our level.
Gonzaga, the preseason number one, they kick it off this week. And I'll finally end it, Mark, by saying, When you and I started the conversation, you were talking about how surreal it is to finally be at this point where there's going to be a game. I've had a number of football coaches come on, guys like Mack Brown and Dabo Swinney, and they've talked about when their season opener finally did roll around, given everything that went into it, you know, all the sacrifices, all the pressure, all the stress, that it was one of the most emotional games they had ever been a part of when they finally did get back. Any idea how it's going to feel for you and the players when you finally do hit the floor next week?
Gosh, I mean, it's interesting to hear that kind of perspective because it's obviously they've dealt with it. It's just going to be so different to not walk out, you know, with just a packed arena and fans and that kind of energy. But I also totally understand what they're saying because it's just, I mean, I just give our guys so much credit. You couldn't even see a light at the end of the tunnel. It seemed like there, Jim, back in April, you know, and when all this thing went sideways, and now to be able to finally get to that point to walk out, you know, and to start against Kansas. I mean, that's going to be a great game for college basketball, and that's what Bill and I. That's why we kind of decided to do it. It just you know, it's good games for both our programs. It's also the right thing to do for college basketball to get it kind of jump started and get everybody focused on it and going. So I'm just going to be probably overjoyed for our players, man. They've had a long, arduous journey to get to this point. So hopefully that'll be what I'm feeling mostly.
That is a great way to start the season. You've got Gonzaga opening up against number 6, Kansas, Thursday night, 6 p.m. Eastern. He is the head basketball coach at Gonzaga. I ran down all the stats. Mark, I appreciate you. I appreciate the friendship and the relationship. Great to have you on the show, and I'm really eager to see how that team looks next week.
Yeah, thanks, Jim, and happy Thanksgiving to you and Sam, and hope you're all is well down there.
Ever since we found out that Drew Brees had pretty much had his torso destroyed, his rib cage smashed up, his lung punctured or collapsed in the last two games, the question was, who was going to get the start for the Saints against Atlanta on Sunday? Sean Payton made it very clear he was not going to tell anybody until he absolutely had to. But that did not stop people from speculating, and it seemed pretty straightforward. We all kind of accepted this. Jameis Winston was the guy who stepped in against San Francisco when Brees went down. And he was solid, so why would you mess with a good thing? He's an experienced NFL starter. He's the former number one pick overall. He's faced the Falcons for years. The Saints have been through a situation like this before when Brees missed time last year and Teddy Bridgewater stepped in. You just toss the keys to Winston. You tell him to be careful, not try and do too much. Show him the reads that you like. Encourage him not to take any unnecessary risks. And then let Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas win the game for you. Don't do anything that leads to a big mistake and those dozens of INTs from last season. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward, and it makes sense. Because Winston is closer to a plug-and-play replacement for Brees, whereas with Taysom Hill, you'd have to do like a total offensive scheme overhaul. That's the kind of thing that takes time, the kind of thing that you want to do in the offseason, not in the middle of the season, not in the middle of a season where you're playing to win it all right now. I mean, sure, maybe you give Hill more plays than he got when Bridgewater was the guy last year. Maybe you make it more of a Jameis offense. But Jameis is the starter. Give Jameis the start. Trust number 41. Take a few safe, deep shots. Eat a few W's while Brees is out. Rehab your rep. Rehab your image as an NFL starter. Then parlay that into a nice contract for next year. In other words, run the Teddy Bridgewater playbook. I mean, it all made such perfect sense. Until the rug got ripped out from underneath that this morning. Because the starter is not going to be Jameis Winston. It is, in fact, Taysom Hill. Psych!
Psych.
She's the best. Psych!
Psych.
Adam Schefter tweeted, quote, Saints QB Taysom Hill will start Sunday versus the Falcons. Per source, Hill took all the starter reps at practice this week. Jameis Winston will be the backup. End quote. To paraphrase a most famous quote, surprise, surprise, mother bleepers.
Surprise, surprise, motherfucker.
Sean Payton just deked the entire world. And this is not some two-headed monster either, as I mentioned. Tamus is not Tamus. Because they're not sharing this thing. It's not going to be a Tamus situation. Taysom Hill is going to be the starter. Jameis Winston is going to be the backup. Cut and dried. This is not a package of plays for Winston. His package is hold the clipboard. Man, well played, coach. Unless you're Jameis. Well played, Sean. Very well played. Now we get to see what happens when you turn the entire offense over to Taysom Hill. This is what we've been waiting for. Well, not some of you. I mean, again, this guy has polarized fans. He did so earlier in the season when he came on the field for a few plays, but now he's going to be on the field for every single play. And again, to me, I don't care what some of you dopes say, it's a fascinating move. Because the Saints have said for a while now, they believe that Hill is the guy to follow Breeze in New Orleans. Hill has said for a while now, he should be starting in the NFL, or he sees himself as an NFL starter. But remember, both of them were saying those things, but they passed him over last year for Teddy Bridgewater. And to do that again this year would say that they may not have confidence in him as the guy to follow Breeze. I have to admit, that's the one thing I thought. And in fact, I said it on the show. When it became clear, or it seemed clear, that Jameis Winston was going to get that shot, my thought was, yeah, but what's Taysom Hill going to say? How's that going to make him feel? The guy's already on record as saying he thinks he should be an NFL starter. One thing to bypass him last year for Teddy Bridgewater, but to do it again this year for Jameis? And come to find out, that's not what they're doing. So not only do they have confidence in him as the guy to follow Breeze, they want him to do it right now. I can't wait to see that. I mean, to me, that is brass. That is brass as hell. You're going with a guy who has 18 career pass attempts over a guy with nearly 2,600 pass attempts. And I couldn't respect it any more than I do. Because while most folks were on Twitter earlier, cracking Payton, cracking Hill when he would come into the game earlier, Payton has never wavered on this guy. He loves the guy. He loves what he brings to his offense. So, what have they got in store? Because you can't just let this guy run the way he's run, right? In the past, you can't have this guy lowering his head, trucking linebackers if he's your starting quarterback. Am I right? But that's part of what makes Hill, Hill. You can't have this guy completely abandon that either and turn him into some drop-back pocket passer. Can't ask that guy never to leave the pocket. So, do you have him run a little bit, pass a little bit, and then put most of the game on 41 shoulders? You know, keep it simple. Or do you take a big swing? I mean, you already are by handing the keys to this guy. Do you make it an even bigger swing and see if you can literally overhaul the offense in the middle of the season? I mean, damn, that is bold. That's brash. That's confident. But you know what? On some level, as crazy as it sounds, the safer move would have been to go with Winston. Like, I know that sounds insane because the guy was a member of the 30-30 club last year, right? But the safer move would have been to give the football to the guy who had 30 interceptions last year. That's a move that pretty much justifies, or you could justify, to everybody. If it backfired, you could easily say that it would have been too complicated to switch to Hill in the middle of the season and that you wanted to go with the experienced hand for games in November and maybe December. That's easier to justify. That's easier to sell. And Sean Payton's not doing it. He's going with Hill. He's shocking the system. He's shaking everything up. I'm not sure how many coaches there are in the NFL that would do that. Maybe none. This might be the only guy. But if anybody can pull this off, it's Sean Payton. He has experience with it. Before he came to the Saints, he was cooking up offenses for guys like Quincy Carter, Vinny Testaverde, Chad Hutchinson, and Drew Bledsoe. If anybody can switch up plans and schemes on a dime, it's Payton. This move, to me, says a hell of a lot about Taysom Hill, and it says a hell of a lot about Sean Payton. And unlike a lot of you, I can't wait to see it. And I think it's going to play out well. I think it's going to go very well for them. I can't wait to see it. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? That's scary, but that's true. So we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you prepare for the unexpected and to review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms can help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. Having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the very best things that you can do to protect your home and your family. What you want to do is install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom of your home. Once those alarms are installed, it's then important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. Remember, alarms do not last forever. They do have to be replaced at least every 10 years. And if you can't remember the last time you replaced yours, it's best to replace that unit completely. My recommendation? First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. The alarm provides 2-in-1 protection, and I don't have to worry about changing out that battery for a decade. Lastly, make sure you take time to discuss home safety with your family. Plan and practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year so you are ready. And for more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at home with your family, go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. firstalert.com/fireprevention month. Rashard Higgins joins us. Rashard, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, boss. How you doing?
Good, dude. Good. It's great to have you on. Listen, I know you're getting ready for Philadelphia, but I've got to get you, if you don't mind, to take me back to Sunday's win over the Texans. What was going through your head when Nick Chubb broke off that run late in the game and then stepped out of bounds right before the end zone?
It's funny you say that. I got a lot of people asking me the question of, man, would you have scored that ball on that run that Chubb stepped out on the one? I said, definitely. I definitely would have scored. We definitely would have been walking the red carpet. But you know what? That goes to show you what kind of guy Chubb is. You know, he knows the situation. He knows the down and distance. He didn't want to put any exclamation on the win. You know, he just stepped out on the one, and he was victory over Houston.
That's a great response by you, starting with that laugh. Like, Rashard, I mean, that was then. You've all moved on. But the way you laughed when I posed that question, like, how many people have asked you about that? And generally, how do they ask the question? What do they want to know? Like, what the hell was he doing?
Definitely. Another thing they talk about always is, man, Chubb messed up my fantasy points.
Oh, yeah.
And all this. And it's, I'm like, man, as long as we win, that's all we care about, you know?
You know, exactly. It's not only that, it's like the fantasy team, it's the guys who got down, the guys who gambled. I thought that Kyler Murray had an amazing statement when he was on Twitch and somebody hit him up with, man, you guys didn't kick that point after that, cost me $2,000. Kyler hit this cat with, quote, unfortunate, bro. Unfortunate, bro. I thought that was such a great line. Like, you guys are doing your job, man. The scoreboard, you're supposed to win the game, and you did. We're talking to Rashard Higgins. There was also a great moment in the third quarter of Sunday's game when you were on a route and the DB committed PI, and you made sure to point that out to him. I thought that was great, too. What was going through your head on that play and then after that play?
You know, had a little inside fade route. I believe it was on Vernon Hargraves, and I did a hell of a job of selling it. You know, he had minor contact, but it was contact on that play. And, you know, I'm just out there having fun, doing what I love to do, and doing it with my team. We were winning. We were up, I believe, 7-3, if I'm not mistaken, 7-3 or 10-3, one of those. And, you know, we're winning, just having a little fun. That's all it is.
I like it. Rashard Higgins is joining us. Now, you guys have won games that have been low scoring. You've won games that have been shootouts. Like, what's it say about this team that you can find different ways to win no matter how that game is going?
It shows that we got a lot of resiliency. You know, Coach Stefanski does a hell of a job of preaching us, telling us that things might not go our way sometimes. You know, there might be times where we might be down or we might be up, but just stay consistent. You know, stay with the game plan, keep a level head, and things will go our way at the end of the day. You know, look up at the scoreboard in the fourth quarter and see where we at and where we stand.
Rashard Higgins is my guest. You know, something else that strikes me about this team is it's like there's so many different guys that step up at different times. For instance, one week it might be Baker Mayfield. Another week it might be Nick Chubb. You've got all the weapons in the receiver room. As an example, in that Cincinnati game, Odell goes down early on with a season-ending knee injury, and then you go off for 6 receptions, a career-high 110 yards. How much pride was there for you in the way you stepped up in that moment?
No, I practiced my ass off, you know, and when my moment comes, you know, I always thought of myself having that moment, you know, and it so happily happened when Odell went down, and here it was, you know, it presented itself, and I stepped up to the plate, had full confidence, and I did what I've been doing all my life, and that's play football, catch the ball.
You know, Rashard, not only, it seems to me, do you practice your ass off, you interview your ass off. Man, I got so much respect and appreciation for somebody who can come on the program, be in the moment, and enjoy the conversation, man. Good on you. Props to you. Props to you. I appreciate that. Sincerely, as somebody who hosts this show now for a long time, I like that.
Hey, listen here. I'm big on energy. My mom always tell me, give off energy you want to receive, you know, and that's how it is in life. So I'm a firm believer in energy.
Oh, dude, I love that. I love that you're a firm believer in energy. That is so good that your mom told you that, man. Give off the kind of energy that you want to receive in return. That is great. Like, what else does moms have? What are some other things that she taught you? Man, I love that.
I appreciate it.
What else did she tell you besides that?
Just keep working hard, you know. Work hard and just never give up. I've been one of those. Growing up was hard, and making it to the NFL wasn't so easy as it may seem. You know, I did my thing in college, and coming to Cleveland, you know, I've been around the 0-16 team. You know, we won 1-15, and I seen it all. You know, I seen a lot of players come through here. I seen different coaches come through here, you know, and at the end of the day, it's how you carry yourself, you know, how you carry yourself, how you go in, day out about your business. And I try to be about my business day in, day forward.
Listen, we're talking to Rashard Higgins. There's a lot in that answer. Like, you have seen all that. I mean, you've been there. I was going to ask you about that. You've been through the 0-16 season. You've been through the 1-15 season. You've seen the coaches come and go. You've seen players come and go. You're still there. Having gone through all that, having endured all of that, man, what's it feel like to be 6-3 and right in the middle of the playoff fight, given everything you've been through and seen?
Listen, I can tell you, it feels a whole lot better than being a 0-8 right now. You know, just having that feeling of being 6-10, whatever right now, we know we not done, you know, and I feel like for a lot of guys that's been here last year and the years previous, we know that at any moment things can go south, you know, so trying to stay consistent is a big thing to us, head down and just keep moving forward, you know.
I do know, Rashard. I mean, as much as a guy like me could know, yeah, I do know. You know, going back to that game against Cincinnati, you had the really memorable catch in the fourth quarter on that game-winning drive when Baker hit you down the right sideline. Is it true that before that play, you told him to look for the back shoulder, and he said, quote, to hell with that, I'm throwing the ball down the field, and you're going to go get it, end of quote. Is that how that went down?
That's definitely how it was, word for word. We was in the huddle. I said, Baker, look, be ready for that back shoulder, man. He might be on top of me. The hell with that, he said. I'm throwing it down there, and you're going to make this play. And I made the play, and here we go. DPJ with a touchdown, game-winning touchdown.
So what's that say about his confidence that he has in you and the chemistry and connection the two of you have on the field?
That just goes to show you that he believes in me. You know, he believes in me, and I believe in when he's down, I try to pick him up, and you know that's just receiver to quarterback relationship. You know, we have a special connection that everybody loves to see, and we love to show it off on Sundays.
Rashard Higgins joining me for a couple of more moments. We're just chopping it up. You also have a great nickname, Hollywood. And by the way, you got to have a lot of game and a lot of it to have a nickname like that, and I think that you've got both the game and the it to back it up. Who dropped that on you initially, and how do you feel about that nickname?
The guy's name is Chris Sampson. He was my little league coach and back in Dallas. I played for the Muskie Hawks, and I was a little flashy kid. You know, I was flashy. I had the swag and scoring touchdowns, you know, laying the big hits on defense. And he named me Hollywood. He named me Hollywood. The name stuck around, and here I am, 26 years old, with a nickname Hollywood, you know, with a smile that brightens everybody's day up.
Absolutely. And in the NFL, living the dream. Listen, it was announced this morning, before I let you go, that Myles Garrett is on the COVID list. He's going to be unavailable to play on Sunday. Knowing what he has meant to your defense and the huge season he's having, what was your reaction to that news?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, just knowing that we can't have our brother out there, I think for 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. But you know what? It's time for somebody else to step up. You know, just like when Odell went down, I stepped up to the plate. Somebody else got to step up to the plate and do the job to the best of their ability. You know, here it is, an opportunity for someone, and it just presented itself. So we'll see who fills those shoes Sunday.
Hey, Richard, one last thought, because you mentioned Odell. Like, I have no idea what that would be like, but what's it like? It's business. It's a next man up league. But if you guys are brothers and you're out there and you're sacrificing, you're paying the price, and one of your brothers just goes down like that during a game, and you know what they're dealing with, right? They're going to go away for a year, and they're going to have to rehab, and that might be a part of the business. But what's that like to just pick up and keep moving after seeing something like that happen to your brother?
It was hard. It was hell of a hard. A hard moment, you know, going back into that locker room during halftime and watching Jarvis. You know, Jarvis is one of the closest brothers to Odell, and seeing Odell crying in that locker room, you know, you never want to see something like that. I've been around Odell for, I believe, 2 or 3 years, and just seeing something like that happen, seeing him put in the work in the off season, him manifesting his goals of what he wanted out of this year, and you know, he's very passionate about the game, and for something like that to happen, you never want that to happen to a brother like yours. You know, heartbreaking moment, and I mean, it's not much more I can say about that. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts like that. He is a wide receiver for the Browns. He played his college ball at Colorado State. He was an All-American there. Cleveland is 6-3. They're at home against Philadelphia. He is Rashard Hollywood Higgins. I have no idea why it took us as long as it did to come together, but, man, I am so happy we did. Promise me we'll do that again. Great to have you on the show, and you crushed that, Hollywood.
Jim, I appreciate you for having me.
One of the biggest matchups of the weekend, Green Bay v. Indy. I know that you're going off Packers plus 2. I know you saw that. At least where I'm checking the line, the last time I saw it, it dropped to Green Bay plus 1. What's the number you're seeing? How are you playing this one?
I'm seeing plus 1.5 for the Packers. I hit the Packers at plus 2. And it's now, at first, it's Aaron Rodgers against an elite defense, an elite 3 technique like DeForest Buckner usually doesn't bode well for the Packers. Now, the question is Indy's D actually elite, Jim? And the numbers say they are the stygiest unit in the NFL. I mean, you can't move the ball against these guys. They and the Rams are the only two teams that actually allow opponents under 300 yards per game. But I feel Indy's numbers are a little misleading, to say the least. Their talent isn't as good as the Rams. This is a good D, but it's not elite. They have feasted off of inferior teams and inferior quarterbacks. Aaron is not that. I like the Packers, but I am a little worried here about Davante Adams and his health. When healthy, he's the only wideout averaging more than 100 points per game. So if he's gone, I like this a lot. Points.
Devontae's not averaging 100 points
yards
per game.
Yeah, my bad on that one. But him against that secondary, you got
to
like Aaron Rodgers.
Trying to crack jokes about Tube hanging out. So come on, man.
My point is, though, the offense is a different level when Devontae's playing.
Head?
the Aaron Rodgers on the road. It's the best offense in the NFL, Jim. 31.8 points a game they're averaging on the road. Now, Nyheim Hines and the Indianapolis Colts are going to be a problem for that Packers run defense, but I'm going with the Packers. I'm going plus two. I actually see plus 1.5 right now, right. But I'm going Green Bay right here.
All right, listen, here's what I want you to do. We're already behind. I want you to tighten these things up.
Okay.
Sort of tough to get a read on either Tennessee or Baltimore this season. Mm-hmm. Both are solid. Seemingly neither are what they were. What are you doing with that game?
Yeah, they're not, because both of them are not at their best right now. The Ravens struggled against the Pats last week. The Titans, though, they've lost three of their past four, and it seems like the two quarterbacks, you know, a lot of people think the league's kind of adjusting to Freaky L and Tannehill. Analytics and numbers like the Ravens, I saw earlier this week at plus 6.5 for the Titans. It's moved all the way down to plus 5. I'd still hit that. I like the Titans. Their defense has struggled this year, but they're getting better on third downs. And plus, last year, Derrick Henry ran over all these guys in the divisional loss there. The Ravens still allow 4.5 yards per carry to each runner in the NFL, and Brandon Williams is out this week. I think the Cookie Monster, Calais Campbell, he isn't practicing right now, so he might not go either. I'm going to go with the Titans plus the points, Jim. I got plus 6.5.
Would you go as low as plus 5, though?
I would. Yep, I'm going Titans here.
Washington-Cincinnati. That game, like, it doesn't sound like much, but I'm interested in a game, any game where Joe Burrow is chucking it around. Does the game interest you at all? Are you going to hit that game?
It does interest me. I'm hitting Ron Rivera. I'm giving up the point. I'm minus 1 there. Washington is a touchdown better this season at home, and they're even better with Alex Smith back there. Now, they can't block, but they welcome the league's worst pass rush, worst defense probably. The Bengals have 11 sacks in 9 games. Big Ben torched them last week. I like Alex Smith to do the same this week. Now, on the opposite end of the spectrum there, the Washington pass rush is probably the best in the NFL right now, and Joe Burrow's line can't block, so only Carson Wentz has actually been blocked or sacked more than Burrow, and he's been pulled down 32 times already this season. So I'm going to go Washington minus 1 and Alex Smith on this one, Jim.
All right, so really quickly, Deck, run me down the 3 picks overall in case somebody jumped in late. We talked about 3 games. What are they again? Just give me the pick.
Packers plus 2 over Indy, Titans plus 5 to plus 6 over Baltimore, and then Washington minus 1 against Cincinnati.
Okay, so those are your 3 picks, and they're for entertainment purposes only. Is there anything else you're looking at this weekend? Any other matchup that interests you?
There's one more interesting matchup to me, Jim. In honor of the Joe Judge v. Mark Colombo workplace violence, I've actually got some odds on Ritt v. Hawk. Now, the early odds are on Ike as a minus 220 favorite to give Pigeon them hands. And personally, I like the old man here, Jim. He's got combat experience. He fought in many words and Bird. His stamina, it's a little increasingly declining since Drytober or whatever geek name that he came up with online. Mm. He's sobering up October, but not November. Due to win quickly. I got to hit Eisenhower here. I think he's going to take this fight to the ground, Jim, and give those birds them hands. Yeah, that's what I got here.
This is absolutely incredible.
Game on.
All right, so
I do have some worries, though, Jim. I mean, you know.
Talk to me.
Yeah, so
it is your segment. Finish the thought, man. Hawk is in shock. Hawk can't even believe what's going on here. Man,
my only worry,
what are your concerns?
My biggest concern is the time of the day for this fight. The old man's hot chocolate and cocoa and sugar could wear off by 2 o'clock, and usually 2 o'clock, and usually it's nap time by that time. But outside of that, I still like Ike. I mean, if the 34th president of the United States could plan and execute battlefield plans, he could take Bird's back and choke his ass out. Minus 220, best bat of the entire week. Put it on Ritt. The Bird's going to sleep. Game bleeping on. Let's do this, Ritt.
This is absolutely amazing. Of all the matchups that you have broken down since we started this segment, that is far and away the best one. And it's great, but here is my question.
Your ego is that true? Your body can't cash.
Seriously, your ego is writing checks that your body can't cash now, and you got a big head. My question is this. Was that for entertainment purposes only, or can we find a site where you can get action on jungle workplace violence where the old man is actually minus 220?
I think you can find a site. It's out there. It's under you. It's right underneath UFC 255. It says Ritt v. Hawk, minus 220 plus 180.
Finally.
Hit Ritt.
Hawk, what's the matter with you, man? I mean, for all the abuse you've taken in the 4 years you've been here, I've never seen you so befuddled. Do you need to jump in on this? You want part of this? I'll give you equal time. I think that is some of the best work that he's ever done. Why do you look so angry?
Well, first off, what the hell is he talking about? A hypothetical Donnybrook between me and Ritt? And then second, to question my stamina against Ritt? I ran a marathon twice and recently. A marathon that James Kelly said I couldn't do in under 5 hours, which I did. So he's coming on doubting me again?
What do you mean he's right there?
That was in March.
Dress him with it. He's still on the air.
That was in March, Hawk.
Well, James, nothing has changed except I've lost 30 pounds and I'm way better off than I was then.
That was in March, Hawk.
Dude.
Honestly, James, I
Eisenhower has made a career out of whooping ass. He's going to have no problem with your young ass.
I'm not mad at him. I'm mad at you. What the hell? You're just dreaming up me and Ritt fighting and you don't have me in that fight? You suck. Honestly, dream day.
All right, first of all, he's not dreaming up anything. He's basing it on the workplace violence, the alleged workplace violence between Joe Judge and Mark Colombo. So he's not dreaming this up.
I want to fight against Kelly now. Forget Ritt. I'm skipping Ritt. I'm calling you out, Kelly.
Boys. Handle no eyebrows first. Work on that diet job.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay, all right.
An amazing job by James Kelly. Probably heard that and you thought, damn, we're dropping bombs. You know why that is? I informed the crew that right before I came to the studio, I had gone with the famous mushroom powder. Mushroom powder. I threw some in my nitro brew.
Dude, I've got a ton of show
for you today.
Let's get it.
Yeah! Puts it downfield, puts it up for grabs, and it is caught.
How many other quarterbacks though can make that play? How many other quarterbacks can keep that play alive and then throw that kind of a ball with the game on the line? Name another guy who can do that.
Below, not good.
Twitter.
To my pants and hyper-extended my scrotum all in 30 seconds. So thanks, boy. We were able to ice your junk.
The 2020 Masters. The long-awaited Masters.
He may seem relaxed. Maybe he talks a little bit slower than the most, but it doesn't mean he doesn't want it. The guy is just that good. And maybe he is that dumb.
The dumbest, smartest guy.
Should all be that dumb.
Well, I committed to the wrong wind.
Second touchdown of the game.
Oh, Mapletron.
Mapletron, if you need him. Canadian Paconatron didn't want any of that. Denimatron didn't want any of that.
Mapletron.
They're 9-0 now.
John Rothstein.
How surreal was it not to have March Madness?
It was unfathomable. I felt for 11 months I was working on baking the ultimate cake. And then somebody all of a sudden told me, you can't have dessert.
Foles is on his back and not
it will
moving.
Take a miracle for this team to turn it around. And I don't see that miracle happening anytime soon.
Dang, Rome. Why are you so mad?
Because I had to sit through that entire game last night. That's why.
Let's go to the phones.
Good to have you on the show. Nick, how are you?
This is actually Nick Foles in Chicago. Weren't even a gun holster for a jock strap.
Paul Christ, how were you able to play that focused and that sharply after such a long layoff?
You open up and we got two takeaways early and able to capitalize on those. I think a lot of credit just to the individuals, just kind of being in the moment and making the most out of it.
Collapsing on Drew Brees and he gets
three fractured ribs, two more fractured ribs, and a punctured lung. Is that all? A ruptured spleen was not a part of that. Why not throw in a lacerated kidney while you're at it? I don't just want this big three in Brooklyn. I need it. We all need it. And more than needing it, we deserve it. Give it to us, Houston. Give the people what they want. An all-time train wreck.
Stop. Trains can't.
He is Sam Amick.
I'm here for it. It's an incredible mixture of transcendent talents, but also very unique personality. Would love to see it.
Hell yes. Make that happen. My man just referred to sex as a competition. Dude, you are winning. Well, he was. Until USADA knocked on his door and called an early stoppage to the fight.
The only chance Buffalo has of winning any type of championship is if Rick in Buffalo rips a... if he rips the knockoff. So.
Ian Book.
You know, I watched the movie Rudy, and that was about it. And then I took my visit out here.
It's the most beautiful sight.
I saw something, and I felt really good about it, and it turned out to be an unbelievable experience.
What is with these people that use floss picks to clean the spaces between their teeth and then just throw them on the sidewalk or in the grocery store parking lot?
Amazing concert experience before the COVID ball dropped. And I
mean, this is not right New Year's at Times Square. This is COVID, man. It's just like 3, 2, 1. That giant ball of COVID just landed on a 250,000 people. Bobby Cano.
Now don't you know?
This guy was thinking, hey, man, I've seen all these YouTube videos of Ben Johnson. Man, my man was fast. I wonder what that could do for me. I'd love to know where he found those roids. I wonder if he went online and went, Ask Jeeves. Dana White's my guest.
I can't stand that guy. The language I want to use when we talk about Bob Arum, I can't on your radio show. But so you're mad because this kid goes out and does what he does and he doesn't sell himself. No, that's your job, Bob.
We were talking to Preston Smith. What did it feel like that they wanted you as badly as they did?
I felt super loved. You know, I felt super loved and super wanted.
Can I get a deck of no? No.
Like the old man here, Jim, he's got combat experience. He fought in many words and Bird. His stamina, it's a little increasingly declining.
Well, first off, what the hell is he talking about? I ran a marathon twice.
He's right.
That was in March, Hawk.
Rashard Higgins.
I'm good, boss. How you doing?
When Nick Chubb stepped out of bounds right before the end zone.
I definitely would have. Or we definitely would have been walking the red carpet. I practiced my ass off.
94.5%, yo.
Yo.
Throw the ball up.
Better catch by Ivy.
Just dizziness.
Stephon Diggs makes a catch.
Keep that sugar out your booger.
Unlimited.
All right, shrimp enchiladas forever.
We are not a Big Ten team.
Pitching a 10.
You have got to be kidding me.
Jim Rome Show.
Andrew Gruse here.
Oodles and oodles.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Listen here, I'm big on energy.
Eisenhower has made a career out of whooping ass.
You right. Suck.
Man, freaking 2020.
Shut it down. Let's go home.
Good night now!
In the Bay, Mike. It's good to have you, Mike. How are you?
Pimp in the box. What's up?
What's up?
Man, it feels good to talk to you again, Jimmy. Thanks for squeezing me in before the end. First of all, let me wish you and your family and the XR4TI2 a safe and wonderful holiday. And yes, I am Team Hawk over here. Anyone who runs a marathon in 6 hours or something deserves my unconditional support and pity. Jimmy, last time I called, I got racked, but that was way back in early 2019. Just like Mike and Indy, though, I'm going to pretend I'm still relevant here in the jungle. Heard you mention Bay Area guy in hour one, Jim, and you may remember my brand is Earthquake Smack, but it's also cracking on all the tech bags living up here in the Bay. But you know what happened, Jimmy? I got one of them high-paying tech jobs. I had to stop calling the show because now I was rolling in what I call Bay Area luxury, Jim. Bay Area luxury is having my own couch on my own street corner. Bay Area luxury, Jim, is using Tesla moonroofs for porta potties. Bay Area luxury, Jim, is getting my free tax-paid organic hypodermic needles. You could say life was good. But then, Jim, like most of America, COVID took that high-paying tech job away from me, and now I'm struggling. And since I'm unemployed like the rest of the clones, it's time to return to the jungle, Jim. Can someone give me Ritz's address so I can drop off all my kids for some hot meals? Jimmy, how about some of that jungle karma for me? Help me return to the luxury I'm accustomed to. Albie, go ahead and put this call in next week's Week That Was. Unwar the abundance of COVID in Justin Turner's face pubes. I'm out.
You know what the hell? He's unemployed. He's had some bad breaks. Rack him again.
Good night now.